Welcome to Talking Points, the loverofbelief.com podcast. We're nearing the end of the season proper. And yes, some people, they may say that we've already had the end of the season, but I'm talking about the international series. As always, I'm joined alongside me by Adrian Jackson, my co-host. And Adrian, you've been going about a bit over the past week, haven't you?
I've been taking in plenty of the Four Nations action. And thankfully, the finishing line's inside, just one more game, the big one. Island Road.
Two games of which to reflect on over the course of the show, but before we get to that sort of stage, plenty of things happening on a domestic front as well, Adrian. Starting first of all with the big news that Joe Tompkins has decided to swap courts and move across to Saracens. Is this a worrying move for rugby league?
Yeah, in terms of Joe Tompkins deciding to see his future away from rugby league and go to the dark side of rugby, I think it is a worrying sign, and rugby league need to be worried about what rugby union can achieve by nicking the best of our young talent. People within the game at a higher level than where me and you sit on the rugby league street will probably disagree by saying they don't see rugby union as a threat, but it certainly is.
I think kind of looking at it though, I mean, Tompkins, was he ever going to be a fantastic international player? Do you really think that we've lost a real talent there?
He's a talented young lad, don't get me wrong, but I think rugby league can cope with the loss of Joe Tompkins. I'm not too sure what kind of player Saracens think they're actually signing and what role they've got in mind for Joe Tompkins. But I think rugby league can deal with the fact they've lost Joe Tompkins. If it had been Sam Tompkins, well, we would have been in trouble, because England are looking to build a future international team around the talent of Sam Tompkins.
And there is one player that has the rugby league world at his feet, doesn't it? Does it also worry you when the likes of Ian Lenehan over at Wigan are saying that he can see a synergy between a partnership between Wigan Rugby League Club and Saracens Rugby Union?
No, I don't see it as a worry at all, as long as both teams, not just Wigan and Saracens, but Rugby Union or Rugby League clubs in the future, do join forces, like Wigan and Saracens have done. As long as all it is just to like share ideas about how to improve performances in certain areas of your game, I don't see a problem with that.
Do you think then in that case, with Rugby League and certainly the Super League, actually upping the salary cap of teams, do you think that is to counter this latest move?
To be honest with you, I don't think by raising the salary cap we'll be able to prevent Rugby Union making a raid on the talent that's going through Rugby League. Because at the end of the day, if a Rugby League player wants to have a change of scenery, all the money in the world is not going to prevent him from staying within the game if he wants to move.
But this is what the Rugby League have come up with, isn't it? They're going to up the salary cap by £100,000 per club, dependent on if you're bringing through players to the elite international squads, to the England Knights, for example. Do you think that's a good thing, that now there is the real chance that the younger players coming through can be rewarded?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's what it's about, isn't it? It's all about making it attractive for players who are coming through the system to make them want to find the future stay within Rugby League. But as we find it in Australia, all the money in the world can't make you stay within the game if you fancy a change of scenery.
So you get the kind of idea of the type of things that we talk about. On a more domestic level, Warrington, they brought out new home and away jerseys. Dare I ask your opinion of these, Adrian? I know certainly the home one's very, very smart, isn't it? It's got like a yellow chevron, blue shoulders, white belly.
It has, it's a great kit, and a proper traditional kit for the year 2012 season. It's a very modern take on the famous primrose and blue colours, isn't it? Whereas the away kit looks like a Dennis the Menace top, and I've got a feeling that away kit might have a bit of a cult following amongst Rugby League fans.
It does have a little bit of a Dennis the Menace about it, doesn't it? It's predominantly red with black stripes and thin black stripes as well. And I tell you what, if Ryan Atkins was wearing a little hat, he looked like a schoolboy, wouldn't he, in that? Other news around the world of Rugby League, and sadly, Glenn Morrison has had to retire from Wakefield before a ball has even been kicked. He picked up an injury in training last week, and the injury is that severe that he's going to have to back in. That's a huge loss, isn't it, for Wakefield?
It is a big loss for him, because Richard Agar started something new at Wakefield, and he saw the signing of Glenn Morrison as a player with a lot of experience to offer the youngsters that are coming through at Wakefield. So to lose Glenn Morrison's a blow for him. It's a blow as well. It just shows you that in Rugby League, they just don't play hard, they train hard as well.
In the Championships, Dewsbury Rams have announced that they're not running the reserve side next season. Now, this is something that seems to be becoming more common in the Championship, so that they can afford to perhaps pay a little bit more to the first teams. But it's quite a worrying trend, isn't it, when they're cutting the youngsters off?
It's a worrying trend because it seems to be the in thing within the Championship and Championship. Well, I know the clubs don't have the big budgets like Super League have, but if you're not going to give local amateurs within your area the chance to play at a higher level of rugby league without the commitment of a professional contract, well, how are these players meant to be able to have the opportunity to break into the professional game?
Perhaps it'll mean the amateur game will also have to change, and perhaps we could see young players being allowed to play on licence virtually with their amateur clubs. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of amateur clubs which are switching to summer, so they'll be playing at the same time of year, won't they, next season?
I suppose that's one avenue they can look at, but if you look at like Dewsbury, who have decided to not have a reserve team, if players get injured, how the heck are they meant to get match fit if they're not got a reserve team to play him?
It's a good point. I know certainly Lee Centurions have also said that they're not running a reserve side next year. Perhaps some of that is down to a financial decision and financial commitments that are involved in that, but I just see it as a really worrying trend. Former Widnes forward Dave Horton has signed a 12-month contract with Whitehaven. That's a good move for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good sign for Whitehaven, and Dave Horton is a youngster still learning his trade, and Whitehaven's a good hotbed of rugby league.
And he's probably one of those players that has played about, 30, 40 games for Widnes over the last 3 or 4 years?
He has. He's had a lot of first-team experience during that time as well. So not only is he still learning the game, he'd be able to offer Whitehaven, even though he is a young lad, a bit of experience as well playing in the Championship on a regular basis.
And certainly that's where Whitehaven will be wanting to be playing the rugby after next season. Rumour has it that they're also after another former Widnes player in Michael Ostick as well, but Rochdale Hornets and Lee Centurions are believed to be in for the 22-year-old prop forward. And another interesting signing, or re-signing, I think, Adrian, Jared Stack. We spoke to him earlier on in the season on this programme. Certainly one of those players who is right at the top of his game, really, in Championship 1. A fine forward. One of the best players from overseas that Workington Town have introduced to the ranks in many seasons. And he's just committed himself to the Cumbrians again. It's a great coup, that, really, for Workington, because arguably, as a former Australian schoolboy, he could step up and do the job at a higher level.
Maybe hoping that Jack Stack will bring that experience with him, maybe at the top of his game.
Another player who has plenty of experience, Rochdale fullback Wayne English, and he's agreed a new 1-year playing contract with the club. Now, we've seen a lot of Wayne English down the years, haven't we, at Championship level. He used to score lots and lots of tries for Swinton. He can still offer a lot, can't he? And perhaps this new role will see him be a big help to the youngsters coming through at Rochdale Hornets, because we're led to believe as well that John Stankovic has 23 players who could be forming the basis of an under-23 side. That's quite impressive, that.
John Stankovic is Rochdale main business for next year, don't they? They had a great season in 2011 in the Championship, and they were looking to build on that, won't they? And it starts at the bottom and right the way through to the top.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Barrow revealed debts of £550,000. Darren Holt has gone in there as their new coach ahead of next season, and he's made a South African his first signing for the club. A rugby union forward by the name of Mike Botes, who spent the last 4 seasons playing with local club Furness. Now, considering that Darren Holt was coaching Furness, he'll have seen a lot of this lad over the last couple of years, won't he?
It's all about knowing your contacts within the amateur game, or being in the right place, and that's exactly where Darren Holt's been, hasn't he? He's looked at this fella in the Cumbrian League, and he obviously fears he can do a job for Barrow in the Championship.
They've also signed a raft of players from last season: Liam Harrison, James Finch, Mike Backhouse, Liam Finch, Liam Campbell, Nathan Mossop and Matt Dixon, all agreeing new contracts. There's the basics of a side there now coming together up at Barrow, isn't there?
There is. He's obviously going to be working hard now, his Darren Holt, to get the rest of the players signed on so they can get in and fully prepare for the start of the new season.
Another team who's starting to sign players, Lee Centurions. They've announced the capture of Matt Gardner, the former Widnes three-quarter. And I'm hearing that John Duffy could be signing on for the Centurions again for next season. It is starting to come together now, isn't it?
Well, after all the doom and gloom, things are looking up at Lee, aren't they? And if you look at some of the signings they have made, not bad, to be honest.
Bob Bezick.
Well, there you go, Bob Bezick's been around the Championship a long time with Widnes and Halifax, and he still has a lot to offer.
In fact, Bob Bezick, he's been right at the forefront of a lot of the international games which Ireland have been playing over the course of the autumn. I got to speak to him just a few days ago, and this is what he had to say.
Well, Bob, welcome to Lee. How did your move come about?
Oh, showed an interest in joining a Lancashire club, and it all fitted together really well.
You've been kind of like travelling for about 4 years now, haven't you, going to over to Halifax?
Yeah.
So was that a big factor coming back over to this side of the Pennines then, and not having to do that sort of travelling?
Yeah, it was one of my reasons, you know. I want to concentrate as well, as much as I can, in building my business up and things like that, as well as my rugby, because that's going to be important to me. But not just that, you know, it's a great club, and I want to win things as well. So it's not just the reason I've come over; it's to win things and hopefully get myself better as a player as well.
What was it about the sort of Lee Challenge that sort of got your juices flowing, so to speak?
I just like the energy coming from my sports, you know, Paul Rowley and Trevor, the coaching staff, and I like that, you know, they've been through a bit of bad times at the minute, and I like how they've come out of it fighting, and I think that's what we're going to have to do this year, you know. They've let a few players go, but the ones that have stuck through, really, obviously some have gone on to, you know, Super League, but you can't be good and things like that. So the ones that have, like, yeah, I don't know if anything's been announced, but like Jimmy Taylor and, you know, Ridyard and people like that, the people that will always give 100%, and that's all I want to do, is just give 100%, and you know, the results will come on the back of it. But I really, really looking forward to that.
There's quite a good squad coming together as well, isn't there? I mean, you've been announced. Greg McNally's coming on board, and Tommy Gallagher, what I've heard so far. I know that you'll probably have a bit of experience of playing with and against Tommy, won't you, over the past few years?
Oh, yeah, played with Tommy, yeah. Okay. He's powerful, isn't he? He's got a cracking football. I played with him at international level when I was younger. He scored a 50-yard try against the Aussies. A lot of them have gone on to play for internationals now, so Tommy's got some great skill, and he's a cracking player. It's just, I've looked forward to running on the back of him, to be honest.
Yeah.
But he's got great footwork and there's a lot of skill as well. I mean, he's only young for a forward as well, he's only like 26, 27, so.
I guess if you was to do, you know, sort of a dead brief resume of what you've achieved in your career, could you do it and sum it up in a couple of minutes?
Obviously, I like being grand finals at Halifax, one of them. You know, not in any order. Playing with Ireland at the World Cup was awesome. Captain in Ireland, that was another thing. That was World Cup, but obviously, you know, when I asked to lead the country, that was brilliant. Mm. Really proud moment. Obviously, the first team game at Wigan against Huddersfield away, special moment. And then you're looking at like the derby games against England, and just so many good memories. You know what I mean, from rugby. So I've got plenty to.
And I suppose being a Wigan lad as well, to get the opportunity to pull on the, you know, cherry and white jersey for your hometown club, that must have meant a hell of a lot to you.
Oh yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, looking back now, you know, you think your world's ended when you're Wigan, but it only just begins, doesn't it? So, just but at the time it was massive. It was the biggest thing going on in my life and stuff like that. So it was really a really proud moment, and happy for my family and people like that who got to see it, and you know. They've supported me all the way through my career, and they're still supporting me now. And I told them the other day about signing for me, everyone was really happy for me. So.
And you've got the chance of playing hooker regularly, haven't you? Because you've been sort of like shunted out to loose forward, haven't you, over recent seasons? Or sort of stepping up and interchanging with Penky a lot of the time at Halifax.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, depending on who the coach is, you know, trying to impress him enough to give me that hooking jersey. But equally, you know, it's the benefit of the team and I've. After at least forward or standoff or wherever you want to throw me, then no, I'm more than happy to do that.
You're a bit of a thinking man's player, aren't you? I think that would be the best way of describing you, because you've got a bit of a kicking game, long passing game, short passing game as well.
Yeah.
What role are you hoping to take in this new Lee team?
Whatever they want to, I'm after it. If they want me to start the ball up and get the ball in, I'll do that. If they want me to be a hooker, distribute and be impact, I'll do that. You know, it's totally up to the coach and how the team play, because every team plays a little bit different, you see. So I think I'm quite adaptable to different coaches, so hopefully my work ethic, one thing I will do is I'll just work hard and the rewards will come on the back of it, you know. So that's what I believe mostly.
You've spoken already about your Ireland international career. What's it like actually stepping up and playing on that stage? Because you're in a quite privileged position, aren't you? Because a lot of players don't get to represent a country.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, we played a four-month out the other day where Munster play dead France beat after 65 minutes and then we just fell away a little bit. And with the team and the effort that we put in, you know, the considering the so-called lesser names, you know, that we had, thought the effort was outstanding. And, you know, we're trying to grow rugby in Ireland as well. It's not just a one-off thing. We want it to be go in the grassroots, and, you know, Mark Aston's doing that a lot, along with all the hard work that Andy Kelly did and Barry and Terry and Mike Callan and people like that. So it's a lot of, it's on the back of her work, and Mark Aston's just taking it on now. So I want to be a part of that as well.
It's kind of just been given international status as well, hasn't it, the game of rugby league in Ireland, which could be a huge boost. I mean, I was reading the article which kind of came out, I think it was over the last couple of days, and it was saying that basically in the last 2 years they've gone from having just 6 teams to having over 20 teams, so it just shows that there's interest there, isn't there?
Oh, yes. I mean, when we played at Munster's game, Dalman Park, it was the first ever schools game of rugby league played, and I think that's you know, it's a great milestone, isn't it, to start off with the first ever game between two schools playing rugby league in Ireland. I think that's the start of everything, isn't it?
It is.
Regardless of the international, I mean, that's past. We've got to have kids coming through, and that's what we want. Ireland international being played to play for Ireland, and that's what we are left. Same with Greg McNally, he loves playing for Ireland. So.
And I noticed one of the younger lads who perhaps hasn't been picked up by anybody actually scored a hat trick, didn't he, against France? What was he like?
Oh, he's a good lad, Joe. He's Ireland through and through, you know, speaks with the Irish twang and all that, not like my Wigan Ireland. But, no, he's a cracking lad, and they're really passionate, and he was brilliant. I spoke to him, you know, he got a good mention after the game. I mean, I don't think a rugby union ground's ever seen an hat-trick scored by a winger, so I think there was all a little bit impressed. I mean, there's a few thousand there as well, which has been increasing that. A lot of work's been done over there to promote the game, and want to get Salmon Park full for the next game. That's what we want.
It was a really good first game, though, wasn't it? You know, I mean, I think that was the first time they've actually took an international out of Dublin as well, to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's hopefully we can make that an international fortress if we want. But like England, they've got Wembley. You know, that's the game that they want to play. We want to play there. Celtic and the staff are great, and look forward to going back, hopefully.
Bob Bezzett, great to hear from him. And Adrian, he should be a big signing for the Centurions.
Yeah, he's a great guitar player, is Bob Bezzett. So it's like the old song, isn't it? It says, wherever I lay my hat, that's my home. Wherever I take my guitar, that is my home.
I didn't realise he was musical. Well, have you picked something up there down the years, mate?
Yeah, I remember him from his time at Widnes. He used to have a bit of a play along on his guitar. Now, after the fallout of Super League, Rugby League in Wrexham with the Crusaders, the club that's going to rise from the ashes of the Crusaders is the North Wales Crusaders, and the RFL last week confirmed that they've been given the green light to take part in the Championship 1 for 2012. One thing we can tell you, though, is that they are going to be remaining at Wrexham. They can't take part in the Northern Road Cup.
I think it's fantastic, to be honest, that the Crusaders, they're continuing, and it's not come without its problems. That they've had to guarantee £100,000 before they could get past the starting blocks. That's a lot of money, that, isn't it, if you're thinking of bringing a new club in?
It is a lot of money, but the club are having to start from scratch, and the fans who watched the Crusaders in Super League for the first time, and that are in Wrexham, they've obviously been bitten by the rugby league bug, because they did everything within their powers to rally round to make sure that rugby league still has a presence in Wrexham.
Yeah, they had a Save the Crew campaign, which I thought was fantastic, as was the fact that 5,000 people have put their names to a petition. I tell you what, if they get half as many of those people coming through the gates regularly at Wrexham, they'll soon get out of that bottom division, won't they?
They will, and it'll be interesting to see how the North Wales Crusaders go, and it'd be great to see them playing the South Wales Scorpions, and they seem to be making great progress in their stay within the rugby league. Even this week, they've announced ambitious plans to try and sign Jamie Rooney, Peter Lupton and Joel McKenna.
Jamie Rooney, the former England international, he could be a fantastic signing for the South Wales Scorpions. And Peter Lupton, sadly, injury has robbed him of a chance of representing Wales during this current Four Nations tournament. But they would be wonderful signings, to be honest, going in at that level. Joe McKenna, he's been there and done it before with both Barrow and Workington.
It just shows how far, in such a short space of time, that the South Wales Scorpions have come.
Does, and Dave Clark taking the reins there at the South Wales Scorpions. I'm still not sure whether that's actually been officially announced, but he resigned up at Barrow several weeks ago now, and all the talk of the town was that he was going to be moving down to South Wales. Dave Clark's a very experienced coach at this level, isn't he now?
Yeah, Dave Clark, he's got a lot of experience of coaching at the Championship level, hasn't he? Did a great job with Barrow. It's a loss for Barrow Raiders, but it's a huge boost for South Wales Scorpions that he's willing to step down in division to help them in their progression within the world of rugby league.
The only other bit of news domestically that I've certainly been able to spot, we are in that time of year where teams are bringing out the new kits. Leeds have released versions of theirs. Hull Kingston Rovers have released visions of theirs. Wigan have also released one of theirs. And Halifax as well.
Also Hull Kingston Rovers as well.
Said them.
Did you? It seems to be the infant that all clubs are going back to the roots, aren't they? I mean, you look at the Hull Kingston Rovers kids, like looking at the team that played in the 70s and 80s.
I really like that new Hull Kingston Rovers strip. I know I got sent a tweet earlier this week on Twitter saying that it was bland, but I'm not having that. I think that is a really good kit.
It is. All that's missing on there, really, in the photo that was sent to me via email, was Roger Millwall wearing it. Now, for ages, around the town of Widnes, there were rumours circulating that Dan O'Loughlin and Tim Sheehan were about to commit their futures to the Vikings as they were getting ready to enter the big world of Super League for 2012. And at the time, it was just all speculation that people couldn't believe that Dan O'Loughlin and Tim Sheehan would decide to leave the glitzy world of Sydney and Australia for the more gloomier road of Widnes and the Runcorn Bridge. But as it is, the Australian team made a flying visit to the town of Widnes in their preparation for the game against Wales at the weekend. And while they're at the Horton Stadium, both Dan O'Loughlin and Tim Sheehan did confirm that they were very close to making a signing for the Widnes Vikings. I found it amazing. I'll put it this way, eventually would have decided to have left the glitzy world of Austria to come to Widnes. What a major coup for Widnes Vikings that would have been into the return to the promised land of Super League.
Could have been putting up the house full signs, couldn't you, every single game next season. I wonder why they didn't. I wonder why they decided that they'd stop over in Australia. Did the cold winters, which were having over here, play a part in it? Did Darren Lockyer just think, no, after all this time, I've had enough, I want to have a complete break from rugby league? Did Tim Sheehan just think, no, I've got plenty of work still to do with West Tigers? What was the answer?
Well, the answer for Darren Lockyer was, although the challenge seemed really appealing to him, he decided he wanted to finish his club footy, as the Australians like to call rugby league, in the NRL with Brisbane. As for Tim Sheehan, he decided he was committed to the West Tigers and he's quite happy there.
Fair enough then. So you've just basically told me about the biggest non-story that was in rugby league then?
Yeah.
You've got another little bit of interesting snippety witness news, haven't you?
Yeah, one of the bit of news concerning a former witness player, Shane Grady, a young lad that he is, so he's decided not to pursue a career within rugby league over here in the UK at the Championship or Championship 1 level. So after getting released by Widnes Vikings at the end of the current season, he went off playing amateur rugby league for the West Ham Bears, and now he's decided to pursue a career in rugby league over in Australia to play for the fantastically named Firle Butchers.
I wonder whether they will butcher a few sides next season with Shane Grady being the ultimate attacking weapon, perhaps.
Plenty to learn from it. It'd be a good experience for him, won't it?
Actually, that level of rugby is pretty good. I was lucky enough, half the Welsh team actually plays at that same level of rugby. Players like Budworth, players like Chris Beasley over there as well. So the standard's pretty good.
It is, and like I said, with Shane Grady, he's a young lad. So rather than playing here in Yorkshire, he might as well go and sample the lifestyle and the glamour of playing rugby league in Australia.
Did it surprise you somewhat, though, that other clubs perhaps either weren't in for him or that Shane has decided, is this a worrying factor as well, that a young lad has decided that his future lies away from these shores, away in Australia?
I think it's a worrying thing for the game in general, because if you get 10 players of Shane Grady's age level deciding once they get out of a contract they're not going to renew a contract within the Championship or Championship 1, and you've got a generation of players that are just leaving the game, and you can't replace that.
Well, best of luck to Shane Grady. Hopefully we'll get to hear about his progress over the course of the next season. Perhaps we could even send Adrian across to the Thurl Butchers for his view and see how things are going. Would you fancy that, mate?
Yeah.
All expenses paid. Love rugby league trip. Okay, that's domestic issues done and dusted. Let's move on now to the international scene. two games were played over at the weekend. It was England against New Zealand, the all or nothing game for qualification for the Four Nations final. And then we saw the spirited Welsh take on Australia. Where do you want to start, Adrian?
I think we'll start up on the home side, shall we, and go on and talk about the England versus New Zealand game. It was a winner-take-all situation, and to be honest with you, the scene was set for England to win it, wasn't it, really? It was a full house, an air of expectancy around the KC Stadium. The crowd were in fine voice as well. Steve McManara was hoping that the whole faithful would really intimidate New Zealand, and to an extent, they did, because New Zealand just didn't play at the best, did they?
No, I thought New Zealand were strangely subdued throughout, weren't they? They had a good start to the game when the ball got kicked up high and Kieran Foran went over, but when that got disallowed because a couple of players were standing in front of the man, they didn't really have a lot to answer then. They didn't really ask too many questions. England took control. It's been a long time in coming, but I think that Kevin Sinfield has finally announced himself as an international standard player. I thought his kicking game was wonderful for England. It kept New Zealand pinned within their own half for much of the first half. And to be honest, I can only think of about three sets of possession which New Zealand actually had over the halfway line.
Yeah, it's been a Four Nations to forget for New Zealand, hasn't it? Not really been that impressive at all. They failed to live up to the holders' title, haven't they, really? And instead of really wanting to make a fight for it to keep hold of the Four Nations, they basically rolled out the white flag in 2011. Even former Kiwi captain Shea McGann admitted that New Zealand just haven't played well all year, to be honest, and he actually blamed his country's poor discipline for the Four Nations exit.
Well, it wasn't good, was it? And they certainly kept Matt Chechen a busy man in the middle. I've got a comment about this referee, because for me, he had a great game. Now, you know me, Adrian, it's not often that I go patting referees on the back, but Matt Chechen had a fantastic game, I thought, in the middle.
Well, we would say that because England won, but I'm sure New Zealand will be looking at the referee's performance and pulling to pieces, won't they?
Well, they will, but another player that they should be pulling to pieces, to be honest, is Isaac Luke. I mean, his attack on Ranky Chase towards the end of the first half was atrocious, to be honest, when he pulled Ranky Chase down, effected a good tackle initially, and then really wrenched his leg back. It was a real cynical challenge, that. And he's a good player. His eyes at Luke. He doesn't need to do silly things like that, does he?
Well, if you look at the New Zealand team in general, they're good players, but I'm just baffled that they did resort to maybe wanting to muscle England out of the game in terms of being too physical with them. If they had stuck to the game plan and played the game that we know New Zealand can actually play, and it might have been too powerful and too skillful to beat England, but I just got the impression of Saturday they just wanted to maybe intimidate England and bully them out of the game rather than trying to play them off the field with the football.
England led 8-0 at half-time. A try after 28 minutes from Tom Briscoe in front of his own fans. That was a fantastic finish as well, wasn't it?
He's another young lad who's learning his trade within Super League, and then that was a world-class finish in the corner to finish off a fine move for England. A
couple of goals as well for Kevin Sinfield, who, as I mentioned before, he's come of age, really, hasn't he, as an international player during this particular series. New Zealand, they were fairly limited in their response, but they did pull a try back on the hour mark. But having said that, England had already gone further in front. Ryan Hall coming up with another super finish. Now, you mentioned about the finish of Tom Briscoe, which was world-class. How do you describe Ryan Hall's efforts? It was his third try of the tournament, and there have been three world-class finishes, haven't they?
Top draw, that's all you can say, just top draw finishing from Ryan Hall. He's had a great season for Leeds Rhinos. I think we've already mentioned that in past podcasts about his form in Super League, and he's carried that on into the Four Nations. And I think those tries he got at Wembley have really given the confidence to kick on with that now, and he showed it on Saturday night as well, didn't he?
He did. Another player who showed tremendous form, Sam Tompkins. He cut New Zealand to ribbons, didn't he? He made a couple of breaks throughout the game. Actually ran for 155 metres. That's phenomenal, that.
Yeah, Sam Tompkins, he proved during that game he's got a good engine and he's full of energy throughout the game, wasn't he? And by making that many metres, he's not just showing he's got a good engine to be able to go for the full 80 minutes. He's also difficult to put down. That's where New Zealand showed he just didn't know where the heck he was going to go, and they gave him loads of room to exploit.
And he was brave as well, because, to be honest, at times, New Zealand, you got the opinion, you got the impression they were trying to bounce him all over the park.
They did, But if you look at Sam Tompkins, he looks very small on the rugby league field compared to the rest of the guys that are around him, but he's rough and tough.
Another player who was rough and tough, James Graham, we was wondering whether or not he would actually take his place on the field for this particular international. There were doubts about both him and Jimmy Peacock, and both of them played. James Graham, I spoke about Sam Tompkins and his impressive stats. What is the NRL going to be gaining next season? James Graham, 32 tackles, no missed tackles, 26 carries in the game. That's a superb work rate for a prop forward.
That's the kind of work rate you'd want for me game, wouldn't you? Really, you'd look at that and be quite happy. You'd be thinking they've done a lot of work for the cause. And he's made no mistakes as well. So good for him that James Graham has got back on the bike in terms of putting the work in for England. And I'm sure he'll be looking to carry that performance into next week's final. And then, as once again, take it over to Australia with him to be able to stand out with the big boys in the NRL. Now, you mentioned there was a couple of injury worries for James Graham and Jamie Peacock. Now, them two did play, but one other player that missed out was Gareth Ellis. He didn't recover from the injury that he picked up in the game against Australia. So his place was taken by John Wilkin. I thought John Wilkin was outstanding.
He was very solid, particularly defensively. I don't think he made too many metres going forward, but he was always busy. He was always offering himself in support, wasn't he? And I also thought as well, we questioned whether or not he has made a valuable impact during this series. But Adrian Morley, that was more like it, wasn't it, from the old man?
I'm glad you said old. He can hit you rather than me. But yeah, he was back to his best there. It was Adrian Morley. Maybe he just looked off the pace in the opening two games of this season's Four Nations. But he's back to his best against New Zealand.
Of the New Zealand side, I actually thought it was another big effort from Ben Matalino, the prop forward. Now, I commented earlier on that he looked like a younger version of Adrian Morley. If he continues progressing, he's only 22, he's Ben Matalino. He's going to be one of the top forwards in the World Rugby League, isn't he, for many years to come?
I thought you were going to say he could be the next Adrian Morley, but there is only one Adrian Morley, and that's the way we like to keep it. But yeah, he's got a big future. Suppose for him, it's just all about knuckling down now and improve as a player.
It is. There was two late tries scored by England, which stretched out their advantage. Graham going over after 73 minutes. Tompkins scoring after 77 minutes. Kevin Sinfield kicked a perfect 6 goals from 6 attempts. And although Benji Marshall put another 2 points to his New Zealand tally, he's been disappointing this series, hasn't he?
For me, he looks tired. However, he's been playing too much rugby league in Australia before he's come over here. I'm not too sure, but in the games that he has played, he just looks tired. He is a total loss of form.
He's been almost listless from him, hasn't it? You know, there's not been any energy there. I think I agree with you, Blinkinek. That's twice in 2 weeks, Adrian. Before we move on to the second game, I've just got to commend that crowd as well. 23,447. A massive total.
It's a record crowd for an international against New Zealand in this country, isn't it?
I think you're right there.
I think what helped the fact that we did get such a healthy crowd at the KC Stadium, because it's not sure of it, a sellout at the KC. I think what helped generate the interest in the game was that there was so much riding on the outcome of this one game, wasn't there?
There was, in many respects. This was the Four Nations semi-final, wasn't it? Because you mentioned that winner-takes-all situation at England. They were the winners, weren't they? And fantastically so. I'm really glad that we've come up and we've seen a complete performance from England, because they were dominant in all facets.
If you look at Four Nations in the past, England just seem to like playing the New Zealand team, don't they? They always seem to turn it on against the Kiwis.
They do, but I think that you've got to really commend this particular performance. I actually think it was really good. It was a big improvement on the previous week against Australia for me. I thought there was some massive efforts. I thought the way that New Zealand went about the game in trying to rough up Sam Tompkins, in trying to rough up Ranky Chase was, well, we knew it was going to happen to a certain extent, but in days gone by, an England team would have responded, and they responded by outplaying them. So that was the first game of the weekend. Let us now move to the second game of the weekend. It was Wales against Australia. Adrian was there at the racecourse ground in Wrexham for that one. And your thoughts? Wales 14, Australia 56.
Well, Philippe, he didn't quite get the fairy tale he was hoping for to end his international career, was he? But Wales in that first half, they played a real game of it and really had Australia on the ropes during that first half.
They did. I think it was Breeders himself, to be honest, who kept Australia guessing. There was some real magical kicks, wasn't there, that the Welsh international put in. One in particular out to the right-hand side caught Australia out early doors, and he continued to do that. And especially when Williams went over after 9 minutes. Wales were in second heaven, weren't they? And then when Elliot Keir went over just 4 minutes later, 8-0. They were well deserved of the lead, weren't they?
They were really dominant, and they got off to a great start against Australia. Now, whether the Aussies just seemed to struggle with the conditions at Wrexham, or I'm not too sure, but it was a slow start from Australia, and I'm sure Steve McManara's England team will be hoping the Aussies have the same kind of start next week in the final. But Wales took full advantage of that one, as the Aussies did struggle to get to grips with the game. And when they were sat on the ground, when that second try went over from Elliot Keir, the Welsh fans that were sat around, you just couldn't believe it.
That was a good crowd itself, wasn't it? 5,200 there over at Wrexham. A good base to build from, I think.
It is, because as we all know, rugby took a bit of a bashing in North Wales in the last 12 months. And that just shows you that the people at Wrexham are interested in watching rugby league, and that's a good, healthy crowd. Bearing in mind there was nothing riding on this game, by the way, because Australia have already qualified for the final, and Wales can't go any further because they lost their opening two games. I suppose the big question was, could Wales get their first victory of the Four Nations? And that 8-0, and they made a good start to maybe upset the form guarding and claim what would have been a famous victory. But we always knew that Australia were always going to be gunning to get back in the game, and the response came from Cameron Smith on the 25th minute to make it 8-4. And then just when it looked like that Wales were going to go in front at 8-6, within 2 minutes, I got the impression Wales just clocked off the final 2 minutes, and Australia, as we always know, play for the full 40 minutes, and they scored two quick fire tries to go in front at 18-8.
Yeah, a couple of great finishes there from Cooper Cronk. Both of them slightly different, but he was the man who just ended up supporting up the middle. And every time I think Australia then made a break thereafter, they had men streaming up in support. It was just simple, effective rugby, but it tore Wales apart, especially in the second half.
Well, Australia did have the noses in front, didn't they, with those two final tries in the final 2 minutes from Cooper Cronk, who was outstanding for the green and gold during that game against Wrexham, by the way, and got a well-deserved hat-trick as well. But I can imagine, yeah, whatever Tim Sheehan said at half-time seemed to work wonders. As for Wales, they were maybe a bit shocked by what happened in the final 2 minutes of that first half, because they just never reacted to the threat of Australia in the opening 6 minutes, and two quick-fire tries from Daly Cherry-Evans and Darius Board really ended the game as a competition. And though Jordan James replied for Wales on the 49th minute, but those quick-fire tries either side of the half-time break basically handed Australia the victory.
Yeah, and they went and scored four tries in the final quarter. Jonathan Thurston, Greg Inglis, Gerald Yeo-Ye, Greg Morris and Cooper Cronk completing his hat-trick. It was a good day, wasn't it, for Cooper Cronk?
And an outstanding end, isn't it? And it just shows what strength and depth Australia do have at their disposal, don't they? You know, they can rest, though. It's a Darren Lockyer to name just a few players who've never played against Wales. And they're able to put out what was a world-class team against Wales, and in the shape of Daly Cherry-Evans, he's the future of the green and gold.
Yeah, it was an effervescent performance, really, from Cherry-Evans, wasn't it? He was all over the place, very, very sparky, very enthusiastic, and that seemed to dovetail in with the work which Jonathan Thurston was doing. And Thurston, I spoke about him last week, he's certainly one player with the X Factor. He turned out another magnificent game, didn't he?
He was involved in everything, wasn't he, really? In defence, on the attack, and with the kicking game as well, outstanding. And he was able to slot the 2 points over when the tries were coming.
Yeah, 8 goals from 9 attempts from Thurston. Cameron Smith having just the other opportunity of adding goal points, which sadly he missed from way out wide. 56 points to 14. If you just looked at that scoreboard, you wouldn't think that was a game, would you? But Wales gave their all.
They did, they give it a real good dig, and Yeston Harris did say the stats is Four Nations, the results are irrelevant, really, it's all about the performances, and can they improve on each game? And if you look at the start they made against England in the Four Nations, then the performance against New Zealand, and the last one against Australia, I think the answer to Yeston Harris's thoughts, can they improve, I think the answer is yeah.
So do you think that we have seen Wales improve as we've gone along in the tournament? I mean, certainly they've been struggling to cause any sort of threats to both New Zealand and England in great degrees, and yet all of a sudden they come up with 3 tries against arguably the best defence in the world.
That just shows you the improvements there, doesn't it? The scoreboard and the line. I think they have improved. You don't forget, a lot of the guys who play for Wales don't play at Super League level week in, week out, so they had to get to grips to the speed of what the England guys play and New Zealand and Australia.
Now, sadly, this particular game over at the Racecourse Grounds has signalled the end of 3 international careers for Wales. Lee Breers has decided to put his cue on the rack and head off into retirement. Sadly, there was no place in this particular game for Ian Watson, who's also hung up his international boots, and Chris Beasley as well. Now, he's been around the international game for probably 2-3 years now. He's packing in because he's a fireman back home in Australia. Interesting times.
Interesting time for Wales. Yeah, losing three experienced players from the international scene is a huge gap, isn't it, to fill, but I'm sure Yeston Harris and his team will be able to find the talent within the Valleys, or if not what, North Wales, to plug the gaps.
They do still have some really handy performers. I think Craig Kopchak in particular has come on in leaps and bounds during this particular tournament. Elliot Keir has as well, and Adrian caught up with Elliot Keir, and this is what he had to say about the game.
Thought Elliot Keir playing Australia here at Wrexham, brave effort in that first half, just ran away with you for the second half.
Yeah, I think we started brilliantly well, but fell off at the end a little bit, yeah.
And what was it like in that first half, mood high at the half-time break?
Oh yeah, it was ecstatic, everyone was really happy and the crowd were buzzing, it was great to be a part of it.
Also as well, got off to a great start, was that the plan?
Yeah, definitely. The plan was to keep our composure and build pressure, and we did that, really, and we completed our sets, and we just showed what we can do.
In the last 2 minutes of the first half, it just showed what a cruel sport rugby league can be at times.
Yeah, definitely. I think we just switched off, and you can't switch off against a team like Australia. They're the best team in the world with quality players, and that's what happens when you switch off.
Now, when they came at all guns blazing in that second half, how difficult was it to stay within the game?
Yeah, it was difficult, but I think the lads dug in really well, and we knew that we just had to dig in, and we just knew it was going to be difficult, and we tried to hang on.
And is there plenty to learn from that performance?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think everyone's going to learn from that. It's a very sharp learning curve when you play teams like New Zealand and Australia and England, and I think the boys did really well.
And for yourself, how do you think the tournament went?
Yeah, I think I did okay, but I think that I was just on the end of some really good work from the team, and I was just in the right spot at the right time.
And now, next year, it's all about Super League for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Can't wait for that next season.
It'll be a great season next year, but unlucky tonight.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Thanks.
Elliot Keir, succinct, I think you can say, from that particular interview, Adrian.
Yeah, he told it as it was, really, wasn't it? And that's the fact that it was always going to be difficult to play against international teams of the calibre of New Zealand, Australia and England. But, like I said, Wales, he slowly adapted to it and he improved as the games came and went.
They've come on in leaps and bounds for me, I think, over the course of this competition, Wales. Now, you were also involved in another interview. This is Darius Boyd, the Australian fullback.
Took you a while to get in the gear.
Yeah, no, Wales come out ready to play, and they were very, very tough early, and I think we did well to stay in it, and so defend really well and come back from that.
We were laughing at sort of the ground and stuff. I mean, early on, did it take a bit to get, you hadn't had a session, does it take a bit to get sorted? Is that part of it, or it's just that they came out, you know, hit the express button sort of thing?
Yeah, I think they probably shocked us a bit early. I think they really come out guns blazing, and in saying that, yeah, I thought we, I suppose, held our own pretty well, and we, I suppose, finished them off in the end, which was good.
One thing you would have liked is you got plenty of room to move for you.
Yeah, no, I did. It was I enjoyed playing fullback, and it was good to get a hit out at fullback, and I really enjoyed the game today. It was good.
You said to us last week, mate, that you were, that it was going to be nice to get a full week of training and that role, and next week's what counts. So you've had one under your belt, and then obviously you're hoping to be better, and you have to be better next week, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. It's we suppose we wanted to have a good hit out tonight to prepare for next week, and tonight doesn't mean too much if we don't do the job next week.
You know, because you're still working on who's going to be playing that wing spot and stuff, I mean, that was good for that as well too, wasn't it?
Because I think both wingers played really well. Jarrell sort of copped a knock early and he came back really well, and Josh has played well too, so it'll be a hard decision, I suppose, whoever they put on there.
Is it pleasing, Darius, what a difference 12 months makes? I think this time last year you're an emu and you're sort of pushing to get in the team. Now you're playing one, you're playing great footy. Obviously, you look like you had a fair bit of fun tonight.
Yeah, I suppose everyone bides their time. I think everyone has those goes in the camps and has a taste of getting in there and being a part of it and watching, I suppose. And that was my time last year, and I've really enjoyed getting the chance this year and taking full advantage of it.
Hey, you watching them last night?
I didn't see the game actually. I forgot it was on, but I was out for dinner with my girlfriend. But I heard the score, and I suppose we'll probably have to watch a bit of video because it sounds like they played pretty well.
But Tompkins, mate, yeah, he had another gun game last night, and he's a danger guy. Are you excited about the opportunity?
Oh, definitely. He played really well against us too. He got through a couple of gaps and really played well. I think he's had a great tournament. And yeah, I didn't see the game last night, but I'm sure he played another good one last night. And I think we'll have to be on our game next week to stop him.
You know, having like a slow start tonight, like as you said, they exploded. Does that sort of help you in a way for switching on this week, you know, going into the final and the fact that it is the final, that it'll just, not so much just happen, but blokes will be, their minds will be in a better place? This game?
Yeah, I suppose you could probably say that. I think knowing it's your last game, you got it all on the whole tournament comes down to this game. So it's, I think in a way, playing this tonight, maybe people are thinking ahead to next week a little bit. But no, I think everyone's going to be really switched on and prepared for the game on Saturday.
Why in a game like tonight, do you know that like Tim warns you and that and says, listen, they're going to come out or not? Look, why can't you sort of stop that happening, you know, when you're such a good side? Like, how does it mentally, like, you know that they're going to do that and play above themselves, like why is it impossible to stop early, that, you know, that first bit?
That's a good question. I don't know. I suppose it's like you said, it is a mental thing, and while you can talk the talk, you got to do the job on the field. And I suppose probably early they shocked us a few kids, and we knew they were coming out with probably a few trick plays, and they probably got a few early on us, which we didn't prepare with. Oh, I suppose we didn't really counter too well, but like I said, I think we held them out pretty well early. So those 20 minutes, they were pretty tough, and then we suppose we come away with it in the end.
Do you take a lot of confidence out of the fact that while you've played really good in big patches and stuff, you probably haven't played your best game yet, and hopefully that's coming in the final?
Yeah, I think that's one thing we can look as a positive. I think in all three or four games, if you count the one in Australia, I think we've played pretty good in patches, but not a full 80 minutes. And I suppose if we can do an 80 minute performance, it'll be very hard to beat.
What does it mean to you personally, Darius, the opportunity to play in a Four Nations final? It's at Ellen Road. You played Origin, you played Grand Finals. This is a different stage.
Yeah, definitely. I've never had the opportunity to play in a Four Nations final, and being over here and against England, it's going to be a massive game. Never played at Leeds, so really looking forward to it, and I'm sure it's going to be a big game.
Would you feel the boots a bit of sway to just play your own game?
Yeah, I think so. Billy's a class act and he's one of a kind, and I suppose I have a different game to him, and I just got to concentrate on myself and what I bring to the team.
You look like you're in pretty good nick tonight, mate. Did you feel like, you know, you're getting comfortable in that one jumper playing, you know, it was one of the first times you've started in the green and gold one?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I think, I suppose I haven't played a fullback for a couple of weeks, and I just really wanted to, I suppose, have a good hit out before next week, because it's going to be a big game, and I'm really, yeah, really looking forward to next week.
Darius Boyd, busy further fielding all them questions.
What an outstanding player. I mean, what a player to have in your lineup. He's a decent winger, but also a very good fullback as well.
And there was a couple of times he showed a real clean pair of heels to the Welsh defence, wasn't there? Where they just gave him a little bit too much of room. And you just can't give a player like that as much room as Wales allowed him.
No one can do, really. Never mind Wales. It's just a class act, isn't it? It just shows you that Australia can lose the quality of Darren Lockyer and the likes of Billy Slater, and they just have someone who can just come in and carry on the work as if they're not there.
That's scary, isn't it? Because if you consider that, if England lost Sam Tompkins, for example, if England lost Ranky Chase, could they call upon players of the same quality?
I doubt we could, to be honest. It would be difficult, wouldn't it? We would be seriously weakened if we lost the number of players of that calibre. Whereas Australia just seem to be able to deal with it, don't they? Bear in mind, Tim Sheens, he rested a few players with the final coming up against England in mind as well. So we handed dead boots. And for like Bruce Scott, Corey Parker, and we already mentioned Dale Cherry Evans.
Yeah, Corey Parker, he's had to wait quite a long time, really, for his international bout, hasn't he? He's 29 years of age these days. Been a big servant to Brisbane Broncos. I think he spent a heck of a long time there, up with the Broncos, but I thought he went quite well. It was an all-action performance from him. So the second half ended up with Australia running in 38 points, only conceding the 6 in response. They've warmed up, haven't they, quite nicely for this game at Ellen Road coming up at the weekend.
It was a good workout for them, wasn't it, really? That's the kind of game they've been hoping for, to play an opponent that was going to make them think about how they're going to go about their 80 minutes, and I thought Wales were... They were never going to beat Australia, but they were plucky and brave opponents.
as they have been throughout and will continue to be. So I'm looking forward to the development of the Welsh side over the coming years. So while ultimately Wales did end up with quite a hefty score being put on them, there is some hope, because coming through the ranks, the Wales under-18s managed to beat the England Community Lions counterparts by 29 points to 28 in exciting fashion.
What a comeback. England were dominating that, weren't they? But Wales really rolled up the sleeves and took the game away from the England Lions. And that's a blow for the England Lions, but it just shows you that Wales are starting to produce their own, and they've got a good quality number of individuals that could maybe kick on from that. And you never know, you might see them wearing the famous Wales top in future years.
Yeah, just looking down that list of scorers, and certainly at half-time, Wales under-18s were nowhere in that game. They trailed 21 points to 6, so whatever was said at half-time, yes, the Irish could do with going over some of it, couldn't they?
I'm sure he'd be on the phone to the manager of the Wales under-18s to ask him what exactly he said. OK, after half a dozen games of the Four Nations for 2011, we actually know now who the finalists are to try and have the opportunity to lift the famous Four Nations Rugby League trophy to England versus Australia. Didn't get any bigger than that for a Four Nations final at Elland Road.
It's a huge game, isn't it? And what we need a fully sold out Elland Road, don't we?
I'm sure they'll get it as well. Elland Road in Leeds is a fine stadium, holds about 38,000, I think. And if memory serves me correctly, in the last final that took place at Elland Road, just short of 35,000 was there in 2009. So hopefully the class of 2011 could actually get the sold-out signs.
They need to learn, don't they, from that 2009 performance, because although they kept at the Aussies for quite some time in the game, the Australians ended up getting away from England. And we can't allow the Australians to get away.
Well, that's what it is about playing Australia, isn't it? You've got to play for the full 80. It's no use just sticking an hour's worth of work in and then turn and allowing your opposition to get the upper hand. So the message for England there on Saturday is going to be play for the full 80 at the top of your game.
And give your all. I think that's got to happen. It's a given that these days, isn't it, with this England with this England team, and certainly the spirit that McNamara is fostering amongst his squad. I mean, I was reading as well that the interesting thing is, at the moment, he's got his under-18s team training alongside the seniors, which I think is great.
It is, because it helps the youngsters get used to being in the international setup with learning off the experience of the likes of Adrian Morley and Jamie Peacock, just to name but a few.
And certainly these New Zealanders, they think that England can go all the way. Thomas Lulai, okay, perhaps he's a bit biased, now he can put his Wigan shirt back on, but he's tipped this England side for glory. Jason Nightingale has also suggested that this England side has what it takes, as has young fullback Kevin Locke.
I think England do have what it takes, but the fact is, it's a lot easier talking about it, it's actually putting it into action, isn't it? And with Australia, they've got that many skillful players within their ranks. You never know what's going to happen on the day.
One thing we do know is that Darren Lockyer will play his final ever game of rugby league there at Elland Road. It's a fitting end to what has been a superb career, isn't it?
Yeah, he's been a great servant to the world of rugby league as Darren Lockyer, and he'll be looking to end his rugby league career with a victory against the old enemy. He'll be hoping that the mean machine of the green and gold will be too mean for England on Saturday night in Leeds.
I want to just have a quick look at Darren Lockyer's career. You mentioned it before, and certainly he's linked with Widnes, and just what a big asset he would have been to the Vikings. But I tell you what, for one man to play an entire club career with one club, it takes some doing that in the modern era, doesn't it?
It does, but in mind that was always a bit of temptation with the offer of more money from other clubs wanting to go and play elsewhere. But by staying at the one club, it's just proved, not just to Darren Lockyer and the Brisbane Broncos club, but to everyone within the world of rugby league, that Darren Lockyer is a very loyal and honest professional rugby league player.
Now, I've also heard tales that over the past week he's done some filming, and in between filming for a special programme that's going to be appearing on Sky Sports, he's been asking about where such and such a body's up to. Has anybody heard from such and such a body? These are all players that he's played against over the years. I think that speaks volumes of a man as well, that he's that entrenched in rugby league. He's wanted to find out where everybody's up to.
it just shows you he has a lot of respect for the players that he's played against as well, doesn't it?
It does, and the fact as well that he's been world-class in not one, but two positions. Remember, he started off as a fullback, didn't he? He was awesome as a fullback. I remember seeing him play on the shores back in 2002, where he cut Great Britain to shreds over at Wigan. We thought we got close to them again, and then as soon as the ball reached Darren Lockyer, he was tiptoeing his way away from the defence, and next thing you know, there's a try under the post.
Yeah, I remember him playing as a fullback. He was world class back then, wasn't he? But to take that skill of being a fullback and to be able to, as you get a little bit older, change your game and be as effective as a halfback, it just shows that Darren Lockyer's up there with one of the greats of the game.
Yeah, Darren Lockyer, world class as a fullback, fantastic as a halfback. He is the ultimate professional, and he will be a sad loss to the world of rugby league when he throws his boots into the crowd. I bet you won't think. I bet they'll be worth thousands on eBay later on. That's just about all that we've got time for on this edition of Talking Points. Thanks for joining us. Next week, we're hoping to have a special guest with us for our final show of the season, when we'll look back at everything.